Welcome, everybody, and good afternoon. Thank you for giving up your lunch. Appreciate your being here. I'm here to talk about a study abroad program, as the moderator mentioned, that really was designed to bring disciplines together and to visit Kenya and to examine the intersection of health, social welfare, and development. I have no financial relationships to disclose, and I would really like to acknowledge the many different departments and people that were involved at DePaul University, where I was currently head of the nursing programs there during the period of this study abroad program, and thanking Joe Kinsella, who was head of study abroad, Dr. Raphael Olgum, who was professor and faculty for our program, and my partner from the public service program, Dr. Neil Vinson from social work program, Dr. Howard Rossing, who was director of the Stain Center for Service Learning, who helped to inform the design of our program, and Alois Ojore, who was a faculty member, professor at Tangaza College in Kenya, part of the Institute of Social Ministry, who is our major academic contact and partner for this program, and who just worked out so many details for us and with us that, you know, he deserves many, many thanks. I'd also like to thank my Kenyan partners, the NGOs that, you know, really formed the structure of the study abroad program, including Africa Peace Point and Amani, the Daughters of Charity, Lloydie Zeiser, and her nonprofit organization, KEST, which provides Kenya educational service trips to, and she helped us to organize our very last program, last year's program, with her connections, the Medical Missionaries of Mary and the Niambani Children's Home. I also do want to thank the University of South Carolina for allowing me to come and paying my way to report on this program. My objectives are basically as pretty simple. I can't give an in-depth report about 3 years worth of work, but I can give kind of an overview and describe the process of developing a study abroad program involving different disciplines, incorporating community-based service learning. And also I would like to describe the program, how it emerged over the 3 years, and the lessons that I learned as a nursing faculty member working with other disciplines, and how to best approach this topic and to use some creative strategies. The first thing is that we took an exploratory trip in June 2006, a full 18 months before the trip was to, the study abroad program was to actually take place. The study abroad program at DePaul really felt that 18 months was mandatory to really establish the contacts, establish the partnerships and the relationships, and to ensure that this was really a cooperative kind of venture between DePaul University and our Kenya partners. So during that trip, we visited different parts of Kenya, including Nakuru, which is a rural area and home of one of the great game reserves. And on the left there are the pictures. The person on the far left is Dr. Neil Vinson from Social Work, one of the faculty. And then Ann Rapp and Dr. Michael Buddy were from other departments and who participated in the exploratory trip, but then went on to develop other kinds of programs through our network that was emerging as we visited. And that's yours truly there in the orange, and Dr. Raphael Ogum from Public Service Management, and he hails from Nigeria by way of Canada and is now a citizen of the United States. The purpose of the trip was really to establish relationships and to build a network of resources that we could draw on, build partnerships with that would be ongoing, that would not just be a one-shot deal where we go and bring students and then leave and that would be it. So we really wanted to, you know, ensure that this would be an ongoing relationship. We would continue to bring students, and we would create opportunities for exchange of both ideas and of experiences. One of the prime concerns, of course, in visiting another country is safety. And so one of the things that we did is we checked out a variety of different accommodations sponsored by different groups. And safety being a concern, we were concerned about the students' health, maintaining it, that the accommodations would be sanitary, that there would be safe food preparation and storage, and that there would be clean water and access to bottled water. There were many, many different places that would offer that to us. It was not really a concern. They were very used to having groups from the West and the North come and want to learn from the people in Kenya. And these are but two examples of places that we visited. Both provided small, clean bathrooms with running water, and both hot and cold water, and clean rooms with mosquito nets. One of the concerns, of course, was malaria, although Nairobi being a mile high, just as Denver is, was not really home to a lot of mosquitoes. But as the climate change has been evolving over time, they are seeing a rise in malaria and the frequency of mosquitoes in Nairobi, fortunately. So we wound up staying at Shalom House the first year. And we also wanted the place to be fairly secure at a compound with walls and with a security guard. We also were very concerned because a few years earlier there had been an act of terrorism bombing at the U.S. Embassy. And so Kenya was on the State Department warning list. So we ensured that the students all registered with the State Department and with the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi, that they had our addresses, our travel plans, where we could be located. We had identified a safe place, a Kenyan place, where we could all go if need be, that would be able to provide transportation to us in the case of the need to evacuate. And we had a phone tree, and we were ensured that people stayed in groups, and that every group had at least one cell phone so that we could contact each other. It never was an issue, but we felt better knowing that our safety plans were in place. During the exploratory trip and a subsequent trip then in August, we also checked out a variety of NGOs, and I will talk about those in a minute. But when we got back, we put our heads together and decided what would be the core objectives for this program. And we decided that there would be two. And the first one would be to analyze the essential relationships between health, social welfare, and socioeconomic development in a global context. And second, to assess the interaction of NGOs and public or government sector institutions in Africa. We felt that Kenya was really a good place. It was a good case in point to demonstrate, you know, and to attain these objectives. We felt it's one of the things it's difficult to teach, to understand these concepts and these relationships in the United States because of our system. The format that we decided on was that we would have some pre-departure classes in the term before our visit. We visited during the interim session in December. We had four pre-departure classes that focused on the concepts of post-development thought and development theory and its relationship to social justice. Focused on Kenyan history, specifically the periods of the colonial period and the post-independence period. We focused on structural adjustment policies of the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the World Bank, and how that's impacted the health and socioeconomic development of Kenya. And we also focused on primary care as a philosophy and concept and strategy to achieve health for all that we saw multiple examples of in Kenya. We spent 3 weeks in country. We provided seminars where we contracted with Kenyan faculty to provide those seminars on African family, religion, culture, and the function and role of NGOs in Kenya. We did a little tour and survey of various NGOs that were serving different populations, and that students then were able to choose a particular location for their mini internship. We started out with a 2-day overnight internship, and then in the third year we actually went to a 4-day overnight internship at the request of the students because the experience was so valuable. Students actually slept right in the place where the kids were or the adults were, the sponsoring organization. They ate with them, they worked alongside the Kenyans, they also had an opportunity to look at and kind of learn from the management and organizational issues in structuring an NGO and how to keep it surviving. We also supplemented the experience with some ego tours and with a heavy emphasis on reflections through journal keeping reflection papers that are a significant part of community-based service learning. Students then did complete post-trip. We had some get-together, and they completed a final paper that was designed to demonstrate the intersection of health, social welfare, and development on a particular topic of interest to the student and in relation to their discipline, as informed by not only the literature but their experiences in country. So going back to the pre-departure classes, we focused on development theory and social justice and with a critique of post-development thought, and I'm not going to read through this. There's been some wonderful sessions at APHA talking about post-development thought and ethics and human rights. But we did look at Kenya as a case example of the problems that occur or the critique of development and aid to underdeveloped countries and the role that the West has played in those development issues and the resultant legacy of socioeconomic health and health disparities. Kenya, as a case in point, I'd like to highlight three events that really figured prominently in Kenyan history. First is the Berlin Conference. Some of you may be familiar with that, but it was held in Berlin in 1888. It was a meeting of all the heads of state in Europe, and basically they sat around a table, and that's a picture of the conference, drawing of it, and divvied up Africa, and not generally by where people lived and who really owned that land there, but by just geographic boundaries, and they drew maps and decided who was going to take control of that country and that land and become the dominators of the country. In Kenya, the British actually were the ones that won Kenya, although it wasn't called Kenya then, and it resulted in what's called a British colonial land grab. The King of England gave choice agricultural land that was basically owned primarily by the Kikuyu people, and they were kind of an agrarian, nomadic kind of people that would farm in areas under a subsistence economy, and when the land got tired, they'd move to another area. So they had a great, beautiful, big area of highlands outside of Nairobi that they lived. It's the largest ethnic grouping in Kenya, and unfortunately, they were all displaced. And the British families who got the land from the King of England under the agreement that they would homestead and establish expansive tea farms. It was found that the climate there was just perfect for growing tea, and the English really liked that. And they wanted them to be able to export that tea back to England very cheaply. And they started out using the Kikuyu people as slaves, and later on when that became illegal, they used them as low-paid workers. And then the third issue that came up are the structural readjustment policies of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. Subsequent to their independence, they were a very broken country and had very few resources that weren't held by the British. And so the the IMF and the World Bank gave loans to the emerging fledgling government to try to help them establish their own form of government, but with conditions. The conditions were that they would not spend that money to provide services like healthcare and education for the people, but rather they would privatize those services and they would use those that income and create a cash economy so that they could pay back the debt and would ensure that they would still get benefits of cheap exports out of Kenya. And here is today's pictures of the post-colonial and post-structural readjustment legacies. On the left is a British family-held tea farm that they've held since the 1800s, and they still are farming it today. And if you look at the picture, you can see little white dots. Those are the tea pluckers, the people who are paid to pinch the top leaves of the tea plants and put them in a big sack on their back and then periodically to go and dump the sack, you know, probably like 50 kilos or so. And then at the end of the day, they weigh them. And that's how they get paid. They're kind of day laborers. On the right, however, is the Kibera slum, which is just, actually in Nairobi. It is the largest slum in Africa and has a population estimated at 1 million. However, when you talk to the Kenyan people, they say that it's probably at least two or three times as big as that because many of the people are undocumented. Kibera has residents coming from all over Kenya. As the land was taken over, the people were displaced, and the subsistence economy was replaced with a cash economy. They were in search of jobs, and they wound up having to settle wherever they could. And so the slum developed, and it continues to this day. Many of the people, they pay rent for these little shacks that they live in, and they do work every day, and they walk from the slum to maybe a mile to where they work. Kibera has residents coming from all major ethnic backgrounds, and some areas are specifically dominated by one tribe or another. Many are coming from rural areas due to the problems of rural underdevelopment, and this multicultural pluralism has led Kibera to be the site of ethnic conflicts through its near 100-year history. And this is an example, it's a picture of a Kenyan soldier going after a Kenyan man in Kibera during the post-election violence of December 2007. It was basically, the election was between a Kikuyu and a Luo, and one won through some questionable practices, and so the others were paid to demonstrate, and the government soldiers were used to quell the violence. A good portion of Kibera was burned to the ground along with people's homes and livelihood. This happened a few weeks after we departed in December 2007, and it really did have an impact then on our subsequent year trip. Another pre-departure concept that we focused on was the Declaration of Alma-Ata, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. It basically stated existing gross inequality in the health status of people is politically, socially, and economically unacceptable. And the WHO definition of primary health care, which really looked at socioeconomic development, women's empowerment, and the provision of essential drugs and services as a strategy to achieve health for all. This is one of the NGOs that we visited. It's called the Riara Health Project by the Medical Missionaries of Mary. They established an HIV/AIDS VCT clinic, which is very common in Kenya. VCT stands for Voluntary Counseling and Testing. They provide very comprehensive, holistic services there to try to get people to come into the clinic, get their medications, get assessed, and make sure that they're on the road to recovery. They also do outreach into Kibera. They send out two nurses and a driver to four different areas in Kibera every week to outreach to the people who do not come to the clinic and cannot come because they don't have any transportation. It's a good example of primary health care. They train community health workers to find people, you know, in the slums who were able to, who could come to the clinic, to be diagnosed and assessed, and then to have the nurse here on the community health workers are on the left, on the right. The RN is on the far right, dispensing medication from her plastic bag, carrying antiretrovirals, antimalarials, anti-TB, as well as vitamins to try to establish the overall health of the people. This is a woman and her child and her husband being HIV positive, coming to get treatment. And then the other nurse would go with a community health worker to homes where they would visit the people who were too sick to come to the clinic and provide the same medication assistance. Another example is the Kivuli Center of Koinonia Community that were focusing on the rescue and rehabilitation of street children. They also became a focus for many of the undocumented refugees from the Sudan who were finding homes, but could not work because they were undocumented in Kibera. Here's another example. I'm running out of time. So our first trip was in December 2007. We had 24 students and 4 faculty. We did have the seminars on African culture and NGOs sponsored by these Kenyan faculty that invited great discussion about cultural differences. And we incorporated the community-based service learning. These are 2 of the sites, and the students working with the children. On the left is a student working with HIV orphans. On the right, working with a rural area where children had very few resources. Another theme that we focused on in the program was diversity. We wanted students to be able to see that not everybody in Kenya was poor and disadvantaged, but there were some very rich areas, not rich necessarily in terms of money, although that existed there too, but in terms of the diversity of the country, its rich resources, and the way that Kenyan people were trying to take advantage of their resources and use them to best advantage. We also focused extensively on the conservation efforts in Kenya. The left is an elephant orphanage. They were adorable, but there are 2 sides to that story. The Kenyan people were telling us that many of the so-called rescuers were actually killing the elephants' mothers or just kidnapping them, elephant-napping them, and claiming that they found them abandoned by their mothers, and the Kenyan people would say, elephants don't abandon their babies. They just don't. So it was becoming a lucrative economic incentive. And so there was a lot of dissension among the Kenyan people about some of these conservation efforts, especially those sponsored by the West. One of the sites I think that I wanted to emphasize that what we saw in the treatment, the care and treatment of people with HIV and AIDS, is the strength and the power of love and family. And the Niamani Children's Home, these were all orphans from HIV. Their parents had died, their family had abandoned them. And they had homes that the boys and the girls lived in separately, of course, until the aid that could come at the age of, you know, an infant and stay through the age of 18. Tried to reintroduce people back into their communities and families, wasn't always successful, but they did find a home and a love of family and people who really cared about them in the orphanage there. And they also had respite care for really sick kids, could come in temporarily, get, you know, IV treatment, hydration, drugs, and high nutrition supplementation, and that would help them to survive the exacerbation of AIDS and then return home when they were healthier. So now, here's another example of, we visited a lot of microcredit programs that were focused on empowering women to, this was the Kibera Paperworks where they bought shredded paper from the banks and then they would melt it down in water and dye and then make paper out of it and make greeting cards. And then, of course, tourists like us would come and we would, you know, see how it's done and we would buy lots of greeting cards. And so that's how some of the women in Kibera were learning to be able to earn their own money to be able to support and feed their families. Numerous examples of that in Kenya. And so some of the, I'm just kind of like bouncing away here. Okay. Some of the signature pedagogies or the things that I think that I learned in teaching with people from other disciplines is that seminar and case example was very good for things like imparting constructed knowledge, things that we understand to be true and that we wanted people to, the students to really learn about. And service learning was very important to engage students in really realizing and understanding how different people who are different and cultures who are different, how they may view something that's totally different from your experience. And if you weren't engaged with them, you wouldn't have appreciated what their perspective was. I mean, you can do it intellectually, but to really work alongside people and working towards serving others was really a good experience for students. It was life-changing, most of them commented on. And the fourth pedagogy that I'd like to mention that was really obvious to me, because as a nurse and a nursing faculty member, we are very, and medical professionals all are very concerned about learning the right way to do things. And so a lot in our teaching strategies is on looking at the right way, the best practices, those kinds of things. But other disciplines like public service and social work are not so much about the right way, because there's no right way when you're talking about social welfare. So I noticed from my partner faculty that they were really good at putting out multiple perspectives on the same issue. Never saying that one was better than the other, but helping students to really figure that out for themselves and to come to some conclusion that was good for them. And then in summary, the lessons learned for nursing education, I think the dilemmas of NGOs, dilemma of tourism, the dilemma of conservation, the dilemma of development, you know, what is it? On one hand, it's is it a necessary part of socioeconomic development? Or on the other hand, is it still a continuing legacy of hegemonic domination of the West and the North over the South and the East? So I think that dilemma was very fundamental and really stimulated the students. I think the second area that was very important was the importance and the effectiveness of primary health care to really achieve a basic standard of living for people who have really next to nothing. And that could be incorporated in the West if we chose to accept that basic premise that inequality is not acceptable. Third, that interdisciplinarity has value greater than simply the sum of the parts. And fourth and final, that cultural competency is more than learning about difference. It is about human rights and working to understand cultural perspectives on human rights. And thank you very much.